High FM, 101.9 megahertz of life.
Dr. Carl, good morning. Help me out here. Nobody eats sardines, right? Nobody.
I love sardines. Oh. I love sardines.
Dr. Carl, et tu. All right. But seriously?
They're delicious. They're a simple meal in one little go. And they've got all sorts of good stuff and no sort of bad stuff. The trouble is that the word sardine itself is not precisely defined. And you are right. They're kind of halfway equal to pilchards. They're basically a small, oily fish that are in the herring family. And there are so many other fish, and it's definitely not precise, and it varies from one part of the world to the other. And the size, well, if they're smaller than 15 centimetres or 6 inches, some definition means that they're sardines, and if they're a bit bigger, they're pilchards. But in other places of the world, it's the same. There's 21 different species that can be counted as sardines, basically just a small, oily fish. And the oily is good because it's got those wonderful oily fats that are protective to your heart.
I know that we have something called the sardine run here. You know, South Africans love their runs. But either way, the sardine run, and I think it's once a year, the sardines come down the Natal coast in their, I don't know, billions, hundreds, millions, I don't know what it is. And it apparently is something to see. I've never actually witnessed it.
It would be a good thing for you to go out onto a boat, actually, and just follow it along, just for fun. I'd love to see it as well. And in some cases, they're doing it following the colder water, which normally has more nutrition in it. But sometimes they can just simply end up doing it as a suicide run, depending on where the cold water leads them.
Oh, wow. I didn't know sardines actually suffered from depression, but there you have it. We live and we learn, don't we?
Yeah, they're the good fats are the omega-3, but I don't like to break things down into good and bad foods. They're just basically delicious. How can you not like them? What's wrong, man?
I don't know. They're sending me recipes. Maybe I've got to try it. Maybe I do have to make an, you know, the truth is I probably never have tried it. But either way, Dr. Carl, let's talk about skin cancer. Let's talk about sunblock. We're heading towards December in South Africa, which is the time, obviously, like in Australia, everybody or many people go away, we catch the sun, we go to the coastal parts of the country, and it can be quite dangerous in terms of skin cancer. We know Australia has a particular problem in this area.
We are, in fact, the skin cancer capital of the world. The first sunscreen sunblock was invented by the Egyptians thousands of years ago, who used stuff like rice bran and jasmine and lupin, which did actually provide some degree of sun protection. The first sunscreen was invented in Australia, of course, and so that was in 1932. And then we've got other sunscreens now more recently. They fall into two types. Here's a trick. Do not mix them. If you mix them, the mix is worse than each individual one. So if you've got what we call mineral ones, like zinc and titanium, after a couple of hours, they lose, you know, 15% of their effectiveness, so you have to reapply it. And then there's the other sort, which is called small molecule or organic. Same deal. After a couple of hours, they lose some of their effectiveness. You have to apply it. If you mix the two different types together, the zinc with the organic or the small molecule, instead of losing only 15% effectiveness after a few hours, you lose 80 to 90%. And the thing is, you don't even know you're doing it because so many products, such as moisturizers and makeup, come with sunblock in them. And in fact, sunblock I've now discovered appears in hair products. So if you wash your hair with it and then it goes onto your skin, and then if that happens to be a zinc product, and then you put a small chemical one on your skin, you're not as protected as you thought you would have been otherwise. So just read the label and don't mix the different types.
So just go through that again. What type shouldn't we mix?
Well, there's only two types.
Right.
And so if you're using zinc, stay with zinc.
Right.
And if you're using the organic, any sort of organic, stay with the organic. But don't mix zinc and the other sort. So stick with one or the other. So if it turns out that your shampoo or conditioner or moisturizer or makeup uses one type, use that type, if you prefer that, for your sunscreen or sunblock.
Okay. That
whatever is... type you got, stick with it.
Right.
So you on one hand, you should slip, slop, and slap. But on the other hand, do not double dip or at least double mix different types.
That is such useful information.
Whatever type you got, just use it all the time.
Is there a standard? You know, my wife and I went online earlier last week to just to order some stuff ahead of the holiday, and we were looking at all of the sunblock, and it used to be, I don't know, 2, 5, 20, 50. Now there's 90, there's 3,070 protection. I made that up. But the numbers just don't seem to make any sense. What do you actually need in a sunblock?
Anything around SPF, it has one way of rating it, sun protection factor. Anything over SPF 30 or 50 is fine. But then other countries but that's not a perfect rating, because you want one that's a broad spectrum. Because most of the damage comes from UVA, and SPF rating doesn't really rate UVA, so get a number more than 30 and the words broad spectrum, which means against UVA and UVB. Different parts of the world have got different things. So the French came up with something that was originally developed in Japan called persistent pigment darkening, and that's PPD. And then there's another system called the star rating. We want more stars, the better. And there's another version used in Asia called the PA. And basically, you just want the highest rating you can get. You go into the chemist shop, you don't want anything except maximum strength. You don't want adequate or barely adequate or inadequate. You want maximum. Go for maximum.
All right. That's very good and sound advice. Even though summer is here or summer's coming, how do trees survive in winter when their leaves are no longer present to photosynthesize?
They've got a trick. They do photosynthesis with chlorophyll, and it turns out that they have just enough chlorophyll in the upper parts of their bark, which are not green, and because they're close to the surface, it picks up just enough sunlight that when they get through into the next summer, they've got just enough energy to manufacture the first buds of the leaves. Then when the sunlight comes, off they go and they're up and running. But if they're well and truly covered with snow all the way through and the sunlight can't get through, then in some cases they can die. But normally they just limp through, kind of like a hummingbird, which is, when it's working as hard as it can, is 1 hour away from starving to death. And yet they manage to survive, although sometimes they wake up in the morning and they haven't got enough energy to power their wings to fly off and get some food. And so even though they're alive, they just starve to death because they haven't got enough energy to fly.
That's terrible. Wow, wow, wow. What a tragic note we're leaving it on. Dr. Carl, thank you as always. You're our Australian science communicator. We speak to Dr. Carl every Wednesday at this time. It is 7:30. I'm Howard Feldman. Good morning.